Hello, hello, and welcome back to another day of Mona's Rants. Hello, nice to see you guys. Thank you for joining. Let's get into it. Today's topic is a pretty heavy-duty topic. I think yesterday I talked a great deal about my depression and anxiety that I suffer from, and just these past couple of days has been really difficult as far as the depression goes. I've been trying to figure out why is my depression so bad. Than more than usual, where I'm having a really hard time getting up. I'm having a hard time staying up, and so I'm trying to power through this for you guys. And I really do want to talk about something that is pretty near and dear to my heart. I want to talk today about Bollywood suicide and the stigma against mental health in the South Asian community. I think mental health is awareness is a it has become a really big deal and become a big trend in the Western societies, and I'm very, very excited and very happy that it's happening. I think maybe not at the level that it should, but it is. However, in the South Asian communities, even here and abroad, those conversations are very limited, if non-existent, and you know, if that or non-existent. So I wanted to talk today about this. I don't know if you guys heard. There's a 16-year-old Indian TikTok star. Her name is Sia Kakkar, and she committed suicide today. She's 16 years old, you guys. 16. Look, I mean it. It's shocking for anyone. I think it's shocking at any age when there's suicide, quite frankly. But I think when it's at 16, you're just like, wait, you, what's going on here? Like, what was going on in your life? How are there people not noticing around you? How are they not paying attention to your depression and anxiety? I don't know the story of this little girl, but it really broke my heart. And she's this beautiful little girl. She was a teenage TikTok influencer. She had over 2 million followers on TikTok. And her manager announced today that she has passed away. And it's you know, it's just another example of what is happening in the South Asian community, because there is such lack of mental health awareness and mental health conversations. There's a huge Bollywood star by the name of Sushant Singh Rajput. He was only 34 years old, and he hung himself. This is I think this is a couple of weeks ago that this guy died, and they said that his autopsy report came back, and they said that he died of asphyxiation. You know, some are speculating that he was murdered, but honestly, like, just my condolences to both the families of Sushant and for Sia. Like, this is just so heartbreaking when you see young people taking their lives at such a young age. I think in Sushant's case, it said that he was suffering from depression, and you know, and that his suicide might have been brought upon by like professional rivalry. And you know, there was no suicide note. I don't think there was a suicide note for Sia either. But I think the main issue here is ignoring signs when people tell you that they are suffering through depression and they're suffering through anxiety. Because if you are South Asian, you are aware of this. And if you are not South Asian, this is how South Asians look at mental health. You're either normal or you're crazy. There is nothing in the middle. You're either normal to fully functioning human being, which everybody knows there's no such thing. Everybody has their share of demons and everybody has their share of challenges, or you're completely crazy. I'm the first person in my family to ever go to therapy. I am proud to say I've been in therapy for 13 years. It has single-handedly saved my life. It has single-handedly made me appreciate myself, appreciate the life that I have, and be able to build the things that I've been able to build as a stand-up comic and a producer. And I think without therapy, I probably wouldn't be here having this conversation with you. I probably would have killed myself a long time ago. And I think among South Asians, I mean, like, and I by that I mean, of course, Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Nepali, we have a culture of competition, okay? There is a culture of competition where the mothers and the fathers sit and compare the degrees, the Ivy League schools, the jobs, the salaries, to come across as better or superior in the circle, in the group, you know, in the circle group that they hang out in. And quite frankly, I think it's a disease. I think it's a disease to consistently push your children into doing something that is something that does not make them happy, something that, does not make them joy or give them any kind of life or emotional satisfaction. And you're constantly pushing them to live your dreams so you can go and show off to people to say, my child has achieved X, Y, and Z. But nobody ever, not growing up in Pakistan, growing up here ever, nobody asked me ever in my family, are you happy? Are you happy? That is never a conversation. Happiness is not a priority. Happiness is a luxury. That's how our culture looks at it. And it's a really fucked up way of looking at it. Happiness is not a luxury. That's why they say pursuit of happiness. I think the level of stigma that still continues. I mean, if you just read some of the comments in Sushant's posts about his death, and people just talk about depression like, depression, whatever. You just take a walk and then it goes away. It's not a big deal. It's like, no, you don't understand. Like, I was researching like how bad the suicide rate is among South Asians here and abroad. And the numbers are horrifying. I mean, they're horrifying, mainly because nobody talks about these figures. Nobody brings it to the forefront. Nobody's talking about these horrific stories of what is happening to young people in South Asian communities here and abroad. Just listen to this story. About on November 14, 1998, a young Indian man named Neil Grover killed himself. Neil was bright. He was studying to become a doctor and he was doing well in medical school. His mother said he had always been happy. She couldn't understand why he might have felt the urge to take his own life. His suicide note was as cryptic as the act itself. He said, I had everything, but life is a double-edged sword. If I tell everything, I will lose everything. How unbelievably heartbreaking is that? There is this other guy. There was another young South Asian medical student. His name was Srinivas Akkaldevi. And he was a medical student who also committed suicide. His family also couldn't imagine a reason. And both Grover and Akkaldevi were as successful as this guy named Sarifshet Gupta. He was a Goldman Sachs analyst found dead after working 100-hour weeks. The cause of Gupta's death has not been determined, but look at what his father, Sunil Gupta, had to say. He started complaining, this job is not for me, too much work and too little time, I want to come back home. And the father said, we counseled him to keep going as such difficult phases were inevitable in a high-pressure job. Sonny, all are of your age, young and ambitious, keep going. That's what they were telling him. Do you see a pattern here? Now, I'm not like victim blaming here, but I'm asking you to look at the core of the problem. The kid is saying, listen, dad, I'm working 100 hours a week. Like I'm dying. Like I don't have any social life. I'm a young man. I should be living my life. I should be happy. I should be pursuing happiness, not fucking working myself to death. And what is the father's reaction? Son, high pressure job, it's inevitable. Push through, keep going. The lack of listening in our culture is staggering. The way the parents and family members dismiss your feelings, the way they dismiss or even gaslight you, it's fucking disgusting. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm being too harsh right now. But I hear stories like that and I'm just like, man, how callous are these families? Are these families also, and they must be, suffering and going through their own bouts of depression where that's how they deal with their own depression, where they don't, and their own anxiety and their own panic attacks, that they just shove it down. shove that feeling down. Don't feel it. That's just insane. I mean, depression, anxiety is dismissed as something like stubbing your foot. Oh, you stubbed your foot. Oh, that's okay. Walk it off. Oh, I have indigestion. It's like indigestion because you ate too many goddamn samosas. Oh, just walk it off. Walk it off. Just go to the gym tomorrow. You'll be fine. You'll be totally fine. Or just a fever that will pass. Hey, take some Tylenol. Take some Advil. That's not what depression and anxiety is. You don't understand. It has really deep roots. The way it runs in your body, the way it runs in your life, the way it runs your life, it is really disturbing. And I think the constant downplaying of depression and anxiety in the South Asian culture is seriously, single-handedly killing young people. Just look at these stats, okay? I was looking at the stats in Pakistan of how bad suicide is, okay? This article came out last year, and they were talking about that between 15 to 35 people end their lives in Pakistan every day. Do you hear that number? The World Health Organization estimated that in 2012, the rate of suicide in Pakistan was 7.5 per 100,000 people. In other words, around 13,000 people killed themselves every year, that year alone. Just that year alone, they killed them. In 2016, the estimate was 2.9 per 100,000. Over 5,500 ended their lives. They say that the experts are saying that the number of people dying is likely somewhere between the two figures, but the truth remains hidden, of course, because there's shame attached to it. You can't talk about depression without your family or your parents shaming you. There's your culture shaming you, your neighbors trying to shame you. Oh, what are you, depressed? Oh, come on, walk it off. What are you, wuss? What are you, weakling? Walk it off. Walk that shit off. You can't walk off depression. You can't walk off anxiety. You can't walk off suicidal thoughts. You can't. That shit is fucking deep, man. And I don't know how much I have to kind of bash my head against the wall to talk about this. And this is such a heavy duty topic, but I'm just listening to these young people and watching these young people take their lives. And it freaking kills me because I used to be one of those young people. I was one of those people that at a young age attempted suicide because I was in such severe depression and nobody around me gave a shit about me. Nobody around me gave a shit about my mental well-being or my happiness. Nobody's ever in my family ever asked me if I'm happy. To this day, I'm a grown-ass woman. To this day, nobody asked that. Do you know how messed up that is? Because, again, happiness is looked as a luxury. You know, in our culture, you know, everything is about certainty. Okay? You have to be certain. If you go out and seek therapy, oh, you must be a nut job. Oh, you must be a weak person. That's crazy. You must be a weak person. You're not a weak person. You have depression and anxiety. Sometimes that shit is hereditary. You don't even ask for it. You have it. Now you got to deal with it. But everybody around you is telling you that you're wrong. Everybody around you is telling you that you're weak. Everybody around you is telling you that it's not real. Dismissing it. And then when people die, they're like, I don't understand. They were perfectly happy. No, they were not fucking perfectly happy. Just because you didn't pay attention does not mean that they were perfectly happy. I know that because I've seen stand-up comedian friends of mine commit suicide. And I saw the sadness in their eyes. And I prayed that they never took their own lives. And sadly enough that they did. Okay? So please, please take mental health seriously. This is a serious problem in our culture. Please don't dismiss next time a friend or a family member comes to you and tells you, I'm depressed, rather than being like, oh, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. What do you have to be depressed about? What do you have to be depressed about? That's another really disturbing one. Take the time to talk to them. Just lend them an ear. Tell them that you're there for them. Those words of affirmation can be so powerful, you don't even understand. For somebody who is, you know, suicidal, or somebody who's depressed, or somebody who suffers from severe anxiety, you don't understand what those words mean. They mean a lot. Okay. I think in South Asian culture, you know, Western idea, it's considered happiness is a West, mental health is actually, even mental health, forget about even happiness. Mental health is considered a Western ideology. Oh, it only happens to white people. It's a white people problem. It's not our problem. Because God forbid South Asians ever consider themselves to, you know, because South Asians are immune to mental health issues. No, we're not. We are very much prone to mental illness. Very much so. And even more so because it goes undiagnosed on a daily basis. My father was a manic depressive. It took me a long time, too many years of therapy, to learn that after consistently talking about his symptoms and his behavior and everything that he would do. My father was a manic depressive. Poor guy never had access to, you know, therapy. Poor guy never had access to somebody to talk to him. So he just did destructive things. That's what he did. Not only did he destroy himself, he also destroyed his family. And I was part of the casualty. So I know very much, very firsthand, the effects of depression and anxiety. It has severe, severe consequences. Just look at some of these findings, okay? The suicide survey they took. 38% of respondents, they had about 5,100 people that they interviewed about suicide. And 38% of respondents said that they personally know someone who has taken their own life. 43% said they personally know someone who has attempted suicide. 43%. 45% said they have thoughts about suicide but never acted on it. 9% say they have tried to end their lives. That is a very big number. A majority of those who took the survey are between 18 to 40 years old. Male, 72%, and from the three major cities, which is Karachi. They took it from Karachi, Lahore, and Islamabad. And I mean, you just look at the numbers and they're so disturbing. They said, they asked a question. They said, do you know someone who has attempted suicide? Over 40% said they know someone. Over 40%. That's almost half the population. That's like every, almost one of every two people that you meet says that they know someone who has tried to kill themselves. That is a real big problem. So has someone ever spoken to you about having suicidal thoughts? 45% said they had someone speak to them about feeling suicidal. Do you understand how this is just shrugged under the carpet like it is nothing? Like it's not a problem? To what degree might the below causes lead someone to commit suicide? And they asked people, so they gave them options like mental illness and financial issues and assault and abuse, being bullied, loss of loved one, relationship issues, divorce. And over half of the responses considered mental illness and financial troubles as high likelihood reasons for suicide. Divorce was seen as having the lowest likelihood of resulting in suicide. Yeah, because some people are just like, geez, I've been waiting for that divorce forever. God knows I was when I was married. I don't know how further I should go with my numbers here, but we have a severe problem. And these are numbers just in Pakistan. We haven't even yet touched the numbers in India, and even just in Asia. Look at these numbers, okay? Let me share some of these really disturbing numbers with you. So according to the American Psychological Association, okay, they conducted their kind of survey, and they said the following information is based on a national suicide rates in 2007. Suicide was the 8th leading cause of death for Asian Americans, whereas it was the 11th leading cause of death for all racial groups combined. Suicide was the 2nd leading cause of death for Asian Americans aged 15 to 34. Did you hear that? Suicide was the 2nd leading cause of death for Asian Americans aged 15 to 34, which is consistent with the national data. It's the 2nd leading cause for 15 to 24-year-olds and the 3rd leading cause for 25 to 34-year-olds. Among all Asian Americans, those aged 20 to 24 had the highest suicide rate, 12.44 per 100,000. Among females from all racial backgrounds between the ages of 65 and 84, Asian Americans had the highest suicide rate. You guys, are you guys listening to these numbers? Asian American men had lower suicide rates relative to those of white and American, Indian, Alaska Native men for almost all age groups. I mean, my God. Listen to some of the myths and some of the facts, okay? Because there's a lot of myths that go around in our culture about people talking a lot of shit that don't know what the hell they're talking about. The myth is that Asian Americans have higher suicide rates than any other racial ethnic groups. Now, the suicide rate, and the fact is that the suicide rate for Asian Americans, 6.10 per 10,000, is about half that of the national rate, 11.5 per 10,000. Myth. Asian Americans have higher suicide rates than any other racial ethnic groups. Fact, Asian American college students had a higher rate of suicidal thoughts than white college students, but there is no national data about their rate of suicide deaths. Myth, young Asian American women aged 15 to 24 have the highest suicide rates of all racial ethnic groups. Fact, American Indian / Alaskan Native women have age with 15 to 24 have the highest suicide rate compared to all racial and ethnic groups. Guys, these are really alarming numbers, but I think on an everyday basis, we just kind of go on with our lives and just never for one second process there are young people that are suffering. I mean, when you talk to young, you know, South Asian kids and you ask them what is it that they want to be, they're constantly churning out thoughts that were put in their heads by their parents because happiness is not on that list. It's about getting good grades, getting in a great college, and not just a great college, like an Ivy League school, right? You're always the top because you're always trying to top the other person. And then you have to go out and get a bomb-ass job. Oh, and by the way, when you get that bomb-ass job, oh, by the way, you also have to find like an amazing soulmate person, or not even soulmate, a spouse, you know, who fits you financially, who fits your whatever your status is, your family status is. I mean, my God, how much pressure is that on one person to fulfill? Like, you're constantly made to feel like you're never good enough. Jesus, I grew up that way. My family made me feel I was never good enough. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Let's look at some of the comments. Okay. What did my friend Vinod say? He said, this is probably also educated and thinking people too. Beautiful souls too. You're probably right, Vinod. I mean, we're talking about people who are young people who have their entire lives ahead of them. And they end it because the pressure is too much, because they know at the end of the day, like they feel like they can't live up to these standards. They can't live up to somebody, their parents or their cultural, there's expectations to be like, to rise and to be this grand person. Like, why can't you just be fucking happy? Like, if you go and do something and you do it with your heart and you're happy, fuck it, then just do that. Yeah, exactly. Let's look at what Mark's saying. Apparently, it is very high among college students. It is high among Native Americans as well. Yes, 100%. And that's exactly what the stat was just showing. Then you said mental health has a very dark history in America with many in the African American, Latin, and other minority culture. Agreed. And a lot of people are very suspicious of psychiatrists. Yes, and that is very unfortunate that people are suspicious of psychiatrists, mainly because of the fact that I think there's also a lot of myths. I don't know if you've experienced that, but there's a lot of, like, I was talking to my brother, and my brother has a lot of trauma in his family, in his life. My brother had polio when he was only 7 months old. So he's consistently kind of grown up with this feeling that he is not enough, or maybe he's not a complete man according to the cultural standings of what a man's supposed to be. And I see what it has done for him, and it really breaks my heart. And I talk to him as much as I can to encourage him to go to therapy, encourage him to get help, encourage him to open up and talk about his demons and talk about his issues. And he's really, really resistant to the whole idea. He can't even process. To him, being vulnerable equals being weak. Isn't that crazy? Being vulnerable is being weak? That's insanity. That is absolute insanity. I have to tell you that this mentality has to end. Happiness has to become a priority in our culture. It just has to. I mean, not just that, mental well-being has to become a goal in South Asian culture. We have a lot of great things in our culture: food, clothing, our respect for elders and teachers, family oriented, but we also have a cultural disease of competing and winning at any cost. even at the cost of our emotional, emotional and mental well-being. And uncertainty comes above everything, right? Money and job and status comes above everything. And living your life is like frowned upon. People look at it like, oh, you must be lazy. Like, oh, you're just living your life. Oh, what are you, a loser? What are you, a loser? Just living your life? Go out there. Be stressed out. Get a fucking brain aneurysm, okay? Get a heart attack. Why aren't you doing that to yourself? You should be doing that. That's what makes you a hardworking person. It's fucked up. It's a really fucked up way of looking at things. I swear to God, this mentality has to end. Just because the younger generation does not have to follow in the footsteps of their ancestors. We just don't. In this case, you know, mother and father definitely don't know best. I assure you of that. I mean, the pursuit of happiness is actually a goal to be attained. No longer pressuring your kids to pursue degrees or dreams that are not theirs. It's not their dream. It's yours, you know? And actually taking the time to listen and care about what your kids need. I mean, I know successful South Asians, who have money, they have spouses, they have kids, they have everything. And they're miserable. They hate their lives. They hate their entire existence. They hate it because they lived their lives for their parents and for their culture. They didn't live their lives for themselves. They never took the time to go through their own spiritual journey and learning about themselves. They never took the time to go through things to discover about themselves, to become the person that they really want to be. I mean, honestly, that is a definite recipe for a lifetime of unhappiness if you're going to follow that. I have a very special guest actually today with me. I'm doing this thing now that every Friday I'm bringing on a guest that is, you know, kind of an expert on the topic and has a lot to do with the topic and knows a lot about the topic. So today I'm inviting my very funny friend. She's a comedian and she's also a huge mental health advocate. She is a TED Talk about her own personal experience of mental health issues, and my very funny friend, Zara Khan. Zara, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, welcome. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. Yeah.
I was just going on a rant about mental health. I mean, did you hear about this Bollywood actor, Sushant, who committed suicide, and this 16-year-old TikTok Indian star today? She also committed suicide. Did you hear about them?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, like, suicide is a big problem. I mean, you know, I've heard your TED Talk, and you talk, you know, pretty extensively about your personal experience with mental health and everything. So can you tell our audience a little bit more about your background and why you are a mental health advocate?
Yeah, absolutely. Forgive me, I'm moving around, having some issues with my what? Ring light.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Can you hold for 1 second?
Yeah, sure. Go for it. All right. Okay. In the meantime, we'll look at some of the comments. What is Vinod saying? Vinod's saying India and the Vedas were the first treaties on well-being and also spiritual well-being. Agreed, Vinod. Absolutely. And then somewhere along the line, we lost that. However, this has helped self-help, etc. But why can't they see in South Asia? With that too. I agree with you. Mark Lee said, I hope that the slowing down of life because of the virus has got people self-reflecting. I know a lot of people are not stopping and discovering yoga, mindfulness, and meditation. I certainly hope so. You know who needs to discover yoga? Trump and Pence. But that's besides the point. All right, Zara, you good?
Okay, yeah. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Share with us about your mental health journey.
Okay, so for anyone curious, I'm Pakistani. I was born in America, though. Yeah. And I have had mental illness run in my family. Like, my dad's sister died by suicide in a fire. This was before I was born, and it was in Pakistan, and my dad's brother had bipolar, and my dad's got his own issues too. And then as for me, my mental illness started whenever I was really young. I was actually bullied when I was 10 years old, and it was so bad that I actually tried to attempt suicide whenever I was 10 years old. And I tell people, like, don't worry, it wasn't serious. I tried to overdose on Flintstones vitamins, so Just shows how like childlike
You came on
that
healthy. You came on healthy the fuck out of that, Zara.
I did, and they taste really good. I had the orange flavor. I remember it so fondly. It was like actually a pretty good experience, so don't worry about that. But anyway, so that was my first experience with depression, and it was definitely caused by the bullying. And then as I grew up, I started to experience more symptoms, like something called mania, and hypomania. Do you know what that is, Mona?
I know what mania is. I don't know hypomania.
Okay. So mania is essentially where you become very high energy and very erratic and very delusional. And hypomania is whenever you're not quite at that level where it's so hyper and delusional, but you still have more energy. You're still really talkative. You're still impulsive and things like that. So it's just like on a lower level than mania. And a lot of times hypomania actually people like a lot because it makes you really charismatic and funny and things like that. But the problem is that it can turn into mania, and that's a really dangerous course there. So for me, it was whenever I got to college when I definitely had the symptoms come out fully, where I was having very severe mood swings. I would be, you know, crying for hours in one day, and the next day I would be just talking at the speed of light and trying to convince my friends to go on adventures, and also doing really dumb thing like trying to skateboard down the stairs and just being really impulsive and erratic. And I would just go like back and forth between these, and I didn't know that I had an illness, and we all thought it was strange, but we didn't know that it was mental illness because no one really knew that much about mental illness at the time.
Yeah.
So it was actually something where I was suffering a lot, and I developed a delusion that was pretty strong. The delusion is was that I didn't have any friends, which didn't make any sense because I was student body president. I was very well liked. I had many friends, but I was so delusional that I would sit there on the floor crying for hours, just repeating, I don't have any friends, I don't have any friends, which is, like, really dark and scary.
Yeah.
And, you know, my friends were concerned, but again, they didn't know it was an illness because they didn't know the symptoms. And then one night, I just freaked out, and I ran away from my dorm. And I became really psychotic. That was my first experience where I became detached from reality. For anyone that's watching, psychosis means detachment from reality, where your perception just becomes really distorted. You might start hallucinating. For me, I became very paranoid. I thought that people were after me. And I was, oh, don't worry about it. Thank you so much. Yeah, read the comments. Yeah, and it was very scary.
Sorry, Zara. What is your parents' reaction to this? Are they aware of this? Or do they chime in? Like, what is their reaction to all this?
All right. So up till that point, they didn't know anything about it. And it was that night whenever I got psychotic, the school found out, and a counselor came to help me. And that's when they diagnosed me. And I actually kept it secret for a while because I didn't want to burden my parents. I just felt like it would be too much for them to hear. But eventually I did call them, and I told them that, you know, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder at the time. My diagnosis is different now. It's schizoaffective disorder, but it was bipolar disorder at the time. And they were very scared. It was very hard for them to understand. And of course, there's a lot of stigma in the Desi culture.
Sure.
But what my parents did that was different than what brown people normally do is they went and they got educated. So there's something called NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And in NAMI is where they have free classes for family members about mental illness. And so my parents went and they got educated, and they learned about the illnesses, and they got more support. And for themselves, it was really important because when you have a child with a mental illness, you also need support. Sure. You also need to get through it.
Sure.
Did your dad also have
any symptoms or any mental illness? Because you mentioned your aunt had it and she died because of suicide.
Yeah, so we're the consensus is my dad has something, but we don't really know what it is. Like, he's a really nice, good guy, but he gets
Yeah,
these
he's a lovely human. I've met
basically,
him. He's awesome.
yeah, he's dope, he's great. He just has these like panic attacks that happen at times, where he just becomes very agitated, and he
And
just kind of blows up.
he doesn't go to therapy. He doesn't consider therapy, nothing.
He was going to therapy actually.
He was, oh, okay.
So he started for a long time. He didn't go, but my family's really different in that we believe therapy is really important. And so my dad, he was actually seeing this Pakistani therapist, and he liked her so much that he convinced her to take me on as a patient, and he
Oh,
left her so that way I would have a good therapist. And I had that therapist for 7 years.
wow. So now the diagnosis that you have, so is that a natural kind of a progression to go from bipolar to you sorry, what's that disorder? Schizo, what is it?
Schizoaffective.
Schizoaffective. Is that a
Yeah.
normal kind of a transition? Like how does that work?
Yeah. So, basically, the disorders are really similar, but they have a few key differences. And like for me, when I got the diagnosis of bipolar, my brain wasn't fully developed yet. And so what happened was that several years later, the illness progressed and I started to develop hallucinations. And because I started to have those hallucinations and I started to have paranoid episodes,
Yeah.
they changed my diagnosis to schizoaffective, where you have those type of symptoms.
Got it. So, and I'm sorry, and tell me a little bit more about schizoaffective and to us because I know nothing about it.
Okay. So schizoaffective disorder is a mood disorder with psychotic components. So what that means is that you have your depression, you have your mania, you have your hypomania. So you go back and forth between those. But on top of that, you also have hallucinations, whether it's like auditory or visual or tactile.
Like you hear things, like you hear things and you see things.
Yeah, that aren't there. And it also means you might also have paranoid delusions, and other type of delusions. For me, I haven't had hallucinations in several years. They just went away, probably because I take medication and go to therapy. But for a long time, I was experiencing mood swings and hallucinations and delusions and this and that and that.
Interesting. And so when they diagnosed you with bipolar, did they put you on medications right away?
Yeah, so I didn't want to take medication. I was very against it. I was like, oh, I don't need that. I had a lot of that stigma, like internalized, because I was like, oh, I'm not crazy. I'm not mentally ill. I'm not like the people on the street. Like I said things like that, and so I didn't want to take medication. But things got worse, and then one night I was on the balcony. A third floor balcony, and I started to hear something tell me to climb from one balcony to the other balcony. And of course, I was crying because I didn't want to, but I was sitting on the ledge with one leg over when my friend came out and stopped me.
Wow.
And it was after that when I realized that there was something really wrong with me, and I decided to go on the medication. But unfortunately, what I did was I got on the medication and I felt like it was changing who I was, so I stopped the medication, and then I got a lot worse, and I actually had a suicide attempt. And then I was going on and off of medication for a summer, and it wasn't until I kept getting sicker and sicker and sicker to the point where I actually stopped doing that and started to take the medication consistently.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is wow, man. That's a lot. That's a lot, Zara, to go through at such a young age and to and you know and to become and now, I mean, I'm so proud of you, just you having just the courage to sit here and like talk about all your suffering and talk about all your mental health issues that you have suffered at such a young age. Now, you also told me, and I hope I'm not overstepping my boundaries here, you had told me that at one point you were drinking quite extensively to overcome your mental health issues.
Yeah, that is true. I definitely always hesitate to talk about it because I know brown people are so judgmental about that, especially
Muslims. There's only one brown person here. Everybody else is white, so don't you worry.
Awesome. White people freaking love me, so I'm good.
One brown guy, everybody else is white. Black and non-desi, basically. So just go ahead, girl. I'm going to be doing shots after this one, so go ahead.
Okay, awesome. So, yeah, in my freshman year of college, to cope with all that symptoms where I was going up and down and feeling like I didn't have any friends, I started to drink. Yeah. And it was very interesting because I can say for a fact that the moment after I started drinking, I changed into someone else. Like, I really feel like the drinking brought out the mental illness because I remember I very impulsively tried the alcohol, and the next day I was just anxious. I was just, concerned. I felt very, what's the word where you're like concerned about how you come off to other people, like self-conscious and stuff like that?
Yes.
And that's just like never gone away. It's just been there for years. I'm like, if I didn't drink, I wouldn't be like that.
like the self-consciousness of like, oh, am I doing this right? Am I like that kind of a thing?
Like just in general, just overthinking and freaking out about things. Like I was actually like confident and collected, but after I drank, I just shifted into someone else. I really think that alcohol triggered the mental illness. I really think that happened for me. My friends were intervening, and like everyone's like, well, it's college, right? Everyone drinks. But whenever I'm like, my friends staged interventions, they're like, whoa, maybe you did have a problem. Because if you get interventions in college, you have a problem.
Because you're drinking till you black out.
Yes, I would do that. I would drink excessively. I would drink to the point where I was throwing up.
Did it make you feel balance? Did it make you feel in control? Like, what feeling was it giving you?
It just helped to numb the pain and give me something else to think about. Like, it was like stepping into an alternate world. But it was much worse because on alcohol, I'm a terrible person. I'm just the worst person out there. I say terrible things. I am a horrible person. I do dumb stuff. I don't remember. And then the next day, everyone's mad at me. It was just such a terrible experience. So I'm happy to say it's been 8 years and almost 2 months since I've had a drink. So
good for you. That's amazing. One of our viewers here, Mark Lee, he had a question. He said, I have noticed any bipolar medicines being advertised on regular media. I had not seen that before. Do you approve of this?
Do I approve of whether they're making commercials for bipolar medication? Is that like what he's thinking?
I think he's saying, I had not seen that before about bipolar. He's saying, I guess, do you approve of, I guess maybe the advertisement. I think that's what he's referring to. Mark can clarify it for us, maybe.
Yeah. So I think that it's important for new medications to get out there because the old medications have a lot of problems. So really old antipsychotics had drastic side effects that were very negative. And over time, they keep releasing these new medications, and a lot of them have less side effects than the older versions. So I think it's really important to get the names out there for new medications because that could mean something really valuable for people who have been dealing with severe side effects, or maybe the medications they've tried just haven't worked. Like, personally, I've tried about 30 different medications because just a
30?
Lot of them.
30?
Yeah, over the years. Just an insane amount of medications. And it was really important for me to know some of the new medications because, and the reason that I went through so many is that they either didn't work or the side effects were too bad that I couldn't handle it. Mm. So it was very important for new medications to come out so that way I could try them.
Yeah.
So I think for that reason, it's okay to advertise those medications. And I don't believe that the drug companies are going too far, because you have to go to a doctor to get the medication. So you have to consult with a health professional in order to get the medications in the first place. And as long as you have that ability to get a consultation from a medical professional, I think it's okay.
We have a comment here by Vinod, and he said, "I'm actually judged by some of my white and Jewish friends for drinking." How much are you drinking, Vinod? Are you beating them in the drinking game? Maybe they're jealous. Then he said, "That's Exchange 30 because they alter your chemistry." Oh, because I think he's referring to your medication of how much medication you're consuming. I mean, that's really intense. So are you on like just one medication now, or are you on multiple medications? Like, how does that work? Do they change the medications as you go along? How does that work?
Okay, so I'm on 3 medications. I'm on 2 mood stabilizers and an antipsychotic. I don't share the medications I'm on because I don't want to influence the treatment. Okay, yeah. So I'm on that, and then I take 1 medication for side effects. Because I have a side effect as a result of the medications I take, so this medicine combats that. And then I have 1 more medication I take because it's unrelated. It's just I get sleepy during the day, and so it's a medication to help me stay awake.
Got it. Oh, okay. Oh, because the other medication makes you sleepy.
I don't know if it has to do with the medications or if I have a condition. We're not quite sure which one.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So tell me how having someone that you've experienced this, the past 3 days, I can't seem to wake up. I don't know. I am not sick. I don't have a cold. I don't have a fever. And I think this is the first time in a very, very long time that my depression, I just feel, is like beating the crap out of me. Like, I am trying to take walks. I am trying to do these live streams. I'm trying to talk to friends. I'm trying to do Zoom. And I think I feel almost like these months of like just pushing stuff away and being strong and pushing it through and walking it off, which a lot of people tell you to walk your depression off. And I think I've been doing that to myself, even though I am in therapy and I go to therapy on a weekly basis. Just these past 3 days, I literally feel I can't wake up. And when I lie in bed, I can't sleep. So it's like this weird catch 22 where I'm like, okay, if I'm tired, then let me go to sleep. But then I sleep and then I can't stay asleep, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Are you still in touch with your therapist at all? Are you doing like telehealth session or anything?
Yeah, I'm doing telehealth. So I'm doing telehealth, and I brought it up to my therapist. I think just everything that's happening with COVID, and I live 2 blocks from Melrose Avenue. So when the protests happened the first weekend, and when a lot of the violence and stuff that was going down, and like then you had your National Guard show up, and that just sent my PTSD in like a whole different spiral. Which it's very interesting because I'm like, man, I've been in therapy for like 13 years. I'm good. Like, I'm good. I got this. And then you're just like, no, I don't got this. Like, I don't got this at all. Like, I remember like Saturday the protests happened, and then Monday I finally mustered up the courage to go food shopping, and I got on Melrose Avenue and all the stores were boarded up, and there were National Guards with like Hummers and with like guns, machine guns and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I was on a call with someone, and I just stopped talking. I couldn't talk. And I felt like I was this 8-year-old girl in Pakistan when there was a martial law, because I grew up under a martial law, like staring at these guys with like tanks and like on the corner of my block that I grew up on, and seeing military guys with machine guns. And I was like, oh my God, am I like 8 years old right now? Like, what's going on? Like, why can I not talk? Like, why am I behaving like I'm this 8-year-old child? Like, what the fuck is going on? And I was talking to my therapist later about it, and I was just crying my eyes out, and I was like, I don't know why I'm crying. I was like, I don't know why I'm crying. And she was like, maybe I think this is because of your PTSD. You have like stuff coming up. And I was like, I thought I worked through this. She's like, And then I realized, I'm like, oh, I've been working through personal stuff, but I never really tackled the overall stuff that was happening, right? There's the trauma happening at home, and then there's a trauma happening overall, right? And I think that was the part that really was like, wow, this stuff is like really deep. Like this stuff goes really deep in your subconscious in a way that I knew it ran pretty deep, but for me, it was just like, I was so freaking triggered. I just thought the world was coming to an end. It literally felt like it was doomsday.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really common with PTSD is that, you know, you go through the treatment, whether it's therapy, maybe medication, things like that. And unfortunately, you know, you can still get triggered. Like, things can happen and it can bring it back up in the surface.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not like with physical medicine where you have a virus or something and then you take Z-Pak for 5 days and it's gone. Like, it doesn't work that way for mental health.
Precisely. I mean, you said that you attempted with the Flintstones gummies. Was it gummies?
They were tablets. The gummies are haram.
Gummies are haram because of gelatin. Right. haram is something that's forbidden because gelatin is made of pork bones, right? It's made of pork fat. It's made of pork fat, the gelatin. So no Haribo for you and me. As much as I love Haribo, I can't have them. But now you've become like this big advocate. You have the TED Talk, which you guys should totally check out. And, you know, towards the end of this conversation, you should tell them where they can check out your TED Talk. But what kind of reception do you get in the South Asian community when you come out and talk about this stuff? I mean, it sounds like your parents have become very supportive of you speaking and being very kind of outspoken about it. But what about like your kind of family members, your aunts, your uncles, or even family members in Pakistan? Like, how do they feel about it?
Yeah. So I don't know if I would really say my parents are supportive of me speaking about it because they definitely don't want me to talk about it. Like, I didn't tell them a lot of the things I went through in college. And then I did my TED Talk, and my mom said, oh, I'm not going to watch your TED Talk. And so I was like, fine. But then she watched it, and she was really upset because she found out about the suicidality. She found out about the drinking. She found out, like, I didn't tell her. I should have told her, but I didn't because I was scared. Mm-hmm. And she was really upset about it. I actually took a trip to Seattle just to get away from her because she was so angry about it.
That's interesting why she would be angry. That is a very interesting emotion. Rather than, yeah. I would think that she would be sad or upset, like, oh my God, my child has been going through all this. But she was angry that it was making you guys look, was making her look bad in front of the families and the friends.
Yeah, I think she's like, you are a good girl. You are a good girl. You are supposed to be a good girl. And she was like, did you bring it in the home? And I was just like, this was 6 years ago at the time. I was like, is this really something we need to talk about? It's like something I've moved past. And it's actually, it was really hard to move past in the beginning, but I was able to do it. So she should be proud of me. Yeah. But I think she's, you know, that whole, like, logo kya kenge, you know, like, what are people going to say?
Yeah.
But it's interesting because my extended family initially, when I was diagnosed, didn't really believe it and thought that it was just poor parenting.
Yeah.
But they've actually come around and they've found me on my advocacy on Facebook and Instagram, and they started following me, and they told me that they are proud of me and that they love me and things like that, which is just like something that I never really heard before. And so that was actually pretty, it just meant a lot. I definitely use this as an example to say that I know there's a lot of stigma in the South Asian culture, but I do think that stigma can be overcome.
Yeah.
And it's something that we can do together.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think definitely, you know, your generation, my generation, and the generation that's going to come after us, they're going to be the ones who are like the more barrier breakers. You know, we're the barrier breakers to be like, you know, we are going to talk about these issues because they're very relevant. You know, mental health issues is a very, very relevant thing. I mean, I was talking about earlier about my father. You know, he used to come home like bloodshot eyes. And, you know, we don't have clubs or bars in Pakistan, so you don't know what an alcoholic looks like. You don't know what it looks like when somebody's drunk. You don't know what it looks like. So we just thought that dad was really, really tired. Every time he would come with like bloodshot eyes. And my father had a very vile temper. He would come home and break every piece of furniture in the house. And, you know, my dad had broken so many couches that the couch place knew us on first name basis. He would have like these massive manic, you know, outbursts where he would just go on like a rampage of destroying everything and then show up the next day and be like, I love you guys. And we're like, well, you don't fucking know which guy's walking in today. You know, you're like, wow. You know, it's it's like Jekyll and Hyde, man. You're just like, which person? So I think I grew up in this very uncertain kind of like you just don't know what's gonna happen today kind of environment. And I think that's how I've lived. That's how I continue to live my life. And I'm like trying to uncondition myself. I'm trying to unfuck myself. to just not think like that anymore, where I always think the world is, everything is at a 10, everything, right? So when the riots were happening and Melrose Avenue, it was at a 10. Oh, they're going to come in there. I'm going to die. My house is going to be burnt. 10. Everything's at a 10. You know, everything is always like the worst case scenario. Like, did your psychosis include that kind of a thing? Like where everything is just terrible, or was your psychosis more about delusion than just like you said, hearing voices?
It was kind of a mix. I did have like pretty horrible times after college where I experienced something called tactile hallucinations, where it's where you feel something that's not there. Just like auditory is like you hear something that's not there, tactile is where you feel. So I would feel things like cut my wrists, like crawl all over me, rip off my toenail, just like a lot of different pain I felt. And I felt like
you were not doing it, you were just feeling it.
Yeah, it was so weird. And like I would see it in my head. So like I would see a butcher knife cutting my wrist. Like I would be looking at it and I'd see a butcher knife, but I knew nothing was happening to it, but I still felt the pain. Yeah, it was definitely tied to a lot of the self-hatred and the self-stigma that I experienced when I was younger, where I just hated myself. I thought I was crazy, and I would tell myself that I would never get better. I was at that 10 where I was just so sick. And it just culminated into like me every single day just getting on my knees and praying to God, please kill me, because I didn't want to do it on my own. Like I was in so much suffering and pain like that. So I would say that was like my 10th for me, but I was able to get help through NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness that I brought up. And thankfully from their support, I was able to reach out and learn that mental illness is not my fault. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's chemical, it's not personal, and there are a lot of people with mental illness out there that live very successfully, and it really is not something you feel bad about, because it's just like having diabetes or a heart condition. Like there's no shame in having cancer. Why should there be shame in having mental illness?
Agreed, 100%. I think, and you know, it's and it's not something you chose. It's just that's just a luck of the draw. Like that, those are the genes you got, man. What are you gonna do? You know. Like, so in my family, so my father passed away at like 56 of a brain aneurysm. He had a stroke. He passed away. My aunt died of it at 42. My grandmother died of it in her like 60s before I was born. She passed away before I was born. Because if your parent has a brain aneurysm, you have 50% chance of having it. 50. Like it's a very good chance. So I got diagnosed last year with a brain aneurysm behind my right eye. Now that's not something I chose. It's just my genetics. Like that's just the luck of draw. Like I just got that, you know? So in order to cure that, I am smoking a ton of weed. That is my way of dealing with it. Apparently, they're talking about how weed actually is helping some aneurysm shrink, which would be amazing. So, so money well spent during the quarantine. Money very well spent. So now that you are in this place, how is everyday life for you? Do you feel like you've just come such a long way? Like, you feel hopeful, you feel like, you know, life is more balanced, and you continue to take your medication and, you know, live your life the way you want to.
I would say I'm doing the best I have ever done in my life right now. And the pandemic has been really good for me because it's given me a lot of free time, which I've used to work on myself. So I've like read books about mental health. I started doing like meditation. I started doing walking every day. And just taking care of my health better. I'm eating healthier. And I just noticed that I'm way healthier than I have ever been because I'm taking care of myself. I'm doing journaling, doing gratitude journaling, which is a really big one. I'm like pursuing my passions and I'm sleeping enough. That is very, very important. As a comic, you get kind of sleep deprived. And so like, that's not the best thing to happen. So I'm really taking care of myself. And I would say like, you know, I just got my master's degree, my master of social work. So I'm very proud of myself for that.
I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, I just got a job as a grant writer, and so I'm going to be working on that. I'm trying to get on late night TV to become a writer, so I'm working on that. I'm still speaking on mental health, and I just want people to know that, like, mental illness is something very scary and it's very damaging, but it's also something that you can overcome. And it's kind of rare to overcome something completely. Like, there are times where you relapse and you fall back, but I do firmly believe that there is always hope if you have a diagnosis, no matter what anyone tells you. And the most important thing is that we have to fight the stigma of mental illness and show that it is okay to have mental illness. And if we change that stigma, more people are gonna get the help they need and more people will be healthy and well.
Yes.
We have to combat the stigma. We have to.
Well, I feel like a lot of the stigma rises from the fact that people, they see parents wanna appear amazing. They wanna appear like, look, we have our shit together. We're like so amazing. And making yourself vulnerable to say, you know, my child has a mental health issue or I have a mental health issue, then immediately it's almost like a status thing where you demote yourself, like you get demoted somehow in some weird status war of like, oh my God, did you hear that Mona has? And it's just like, so fucking what if I have it? You know, it's just like, you bang like cabana boys just because your husband and you have a horrible marriage. Like, you know, like at least I can take care of my problem. You don't even acknowledge your problem. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's always this thing about trying to appear amazing. It's always a status war. Oh, your kid went to this. Oh, my kid went to this. Oh, your kid makes 200,000. My kid makes 500,000. And I think that level of stigma comes from a place of always trying to appear perfect, always trying to appear that everything is amazing, everything is great. My brother recently said something to me that like really just kind of, I was like, whoa, is that how you think? My brother said to me, all my brothers are older than me. My third oldest brother is the one I'm closest to. And he said something to me and he was like, I was like, you know, he really struggles with relationships because he has polio in his left leg. And he grew up with polio. He got polio when he was 7 months old. And it's really affected him a lot. I see it in a psyche. I see how it almost has like broken him inside. And I keep urging him to go to therapy. I keep urging him to go and take care of his mental health. And he said something to me, which really was like, I was like, wow, that's a lot of people think like that. He said, I can't make myself vulnerable. It would make me look weak.
Yeah, you need to read Brené Brown. What? You know Brené Brown?
Brené Brown is great. She's great. She's so freaking great. Yeah, I mean, I was telling him about like the power of vulnerability, you know, and I think there's just such a lack of self-awareness in the South Asian culture of how you have to be perfect just be perfect. Be good girl, be perfect. And it's like, nobody fucking perfect. Like, we are all broken. We are all born broken to a certain extent, or we become a little broken. How else are you supposed to let the light in if you're not broken? If everything is so perfect, then how else do you grow spiritually and emotionally? How do you grow? You know?
Yeah. And I say with my generation, like my cousins who are around my age are more supportive about the mental illness thing. Yeah. They follow me on social media. They check me out and things like that. So I feel like things are changing, and I've seen the change in my older relatives. Not everyone. So I wish I knew, like, what exactly caused that shift in their understanding. So I could, like, you know, mass market it and be like, hey, let's solve brown stigma by doing X, Y, and Z. So I don't really know what fully made them, but I have seen the change. And so I think we just need to be more targeted with it and be more open about it and start talking about it. Like, our families aren't perfect, okay? Not all of our kids can be doctors.
That's right. That sort of thing. Some of us just want to go on stage and sling dick jokes. Some of us just want to live our lives that way. Like, leave me alone. You know, and it goes back to the point that I was making before I brought you on, that happiness is not on the priority list. Happiness is not on the priority list. You know, like, being content with yourself and with life is not on the priority list. It's about money and schools and status and, you know, find an amazing spouse. Even if you don't get along with them, you know.
Yeah.
You know?
Just what looks the best is the problem. But it's like, I took this happiness class. For anyone listening, it's on Coursera. It's a Yale class called The Science of Well-Being. And all of the things you mentioned, there are studies that show that's not what makes you happy. Like, money, fame, wealth, jobs, you know, even having a perfect figure doesn't make you happy at all. It actually can make you very unhappy. But those are the things we're taught to strive for from the very beginning. Yeah. And that's so damaging, because when we don't reach it, we just become so affected and our mental health suffers. It's such a problem.
That is so crazy. There is this amazing documentary that's done by my buddy called Happy. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I think it's on Netflix. It's called Happy. It did extremely well. And they talk about, like, people think that, oh, if you have money, you know, it makes you so happy, just like you said, and money does not make you happy. And they found, did a study that they found out that once you make something like, they said, like, 50 million, it doesn't matter how much money you make after that. It just doesn't matter. It's not a contributing factor to happiness. And one of the things they found out in Scandinavian countries, and why quality of life is so much better in Scandinavian countries, because nobody eats dinner alone. There's no frozen dinner concept. People live in a communal environment. So, for instance, they were talking about this one family, this one woman, she was going through a divorce, and she had two kids, so she would go to school. And, you know, and I guess in America, it would be more like, you know, they would have babysitter, or, you know, and she would have to go to work and rush back home and make dinner and, you know, and help kids with the school. And it's not like that there. They have a communal setting. So while she's at work, the kids go to school. One of the neighbors goes and picks the kid up. This other neighbor helps with their homework. By the time the lady comes back home, there's already dinner that's made. I mean, it's like this giant communal lifestyle. And so you never feel alone or lonely or stressed. You always have someone to talk to. And I feel like in America, we've been sold this idea that we somehow are like the happiest nation on the planet because we're a capitalistic country. I think it's quite the contrary. I think it's quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're very individualistic in America.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see it in things like whether someone will wear a mask or not. Like, it's such a selfish thing to be like, I'm not going to wear a mask because I'm in America and I want to be free. It's just like, in all these other countries, especially Eastern countries, they're wearing a mask out of respect, out of caring for you, about thinking about the group mentality and making sure that all of us are safe and keep each other safe. But that's something that's so beyond people in America. And I think that's also why we're struggling with the pandemic so much more than all these other countries that are dealing really well with coronavirus. Mm-hmm. It's because People are just like not thinking about the bigger picture, just thinking about themselves. Like, I don't want to stay home. I don't want to stay home. It's not fair. Instead of thinking about something bigger. And it's really unfortunate because that contributes to unhappiness, and it's actually contributing to a lot of death in America.
I mean, we're like barely in the first wave of COVID right now. And people are like, well, putting a mask on is like slavery. I'm like, okay, that is not like slavery at all. Like, I have no idea how you deciphered that.
Karen.
Like,
Stop it, Karen.
listen, Chad needs his haircut, and Karen needs her nails done so they can go to Applebee's. You know what I'm saying? Like, they need to fucking calm down. Like, we have, we're, they, did you hear about how LA is at the verge of becoming the epicenter of COVID? They're talking about that we're gonna beat out New York City. That's terrifying, man. That's, I mean, Orange County, you live in, you're in OC. Like, the cases spiked there, didn't they?
Cases are going up every single day. And Orange County anti-mask people were successful. Like, they went and they stormed the freaking board of supervisors and called them all these names. And OC then made masks optional. And then the governor of California, Newsom, was like, "This is stupid. No, you have to wear masks." And then he put that statewide order because Orange County people are idiots. Like, not everyone, just, the ones that are really dumb. Like, one thing that made me so upset was this woman. She said to the board of supervisors, "You guys are kneeling on our necks and we can't breathe." And I'm this freaking white lady talking about masks. And I was like, that is so disgusting on so many levels. I am just horrified that she took that phrase from people who are really suffering. And I was like, this is disgusting.
Have died because of that. Because somebody was leaning on their neck and then broke their fucking windpipe and shit and they died.
I was like, Matt.
The false equivalency, like the level of delusion in these their minds of being like, oh, yeah, I'm being oppressed right now. It's like, no, you don't like a mask, then you're really not gonna like the ventilator, tell you that much. You're really not gonna take the ventilator because that shit is stuck to your face. I mean, it's I don't know. We live in such a crazy entitled world, and I feel like it just adds more to the depression. Like, it's just been for me, I live by myself, I live with my dog, and there's only so many games I can play with my dog, there's only so many walks I can go on. But like that lack of human interaction and then sitting down and breaking bread with a friend, like meeting you and having lunch or dinner with you, like it's really getting to me. And I see what it's doing to me. I almost feel like I'm breaking down inside, like I'm like breaking down a little bit, and I'm trying to, kind of keep my sanity up. One of the things that I've noticed about myself is that I have a lot of like past demons coming up, which has been very interesting, that like they want to be dealt with. Like, there's all this like past trauma, and these incidents come up where I could be watching something, and then I'll be triggered by something, and I'm like, whoa, whoa, what's going on? Like, why am I feeling so triggered? Like, I don't know. Are you kind of going through this kind of thing? I mean, I know that you're surrounded by family, so that helps out a little bit, but how is that for you?
It is difficult, because going from seeing people like every day, like many, many people, like at open mics and things like that, and at work and everything, has like to go from that and then suddenly stop seeing people altogether, like it's difficult. And I mean, I love my family, but they really make life really difficult. Like, they are just not the most stable people. Like, they freaking
Welcome
got
to
into a fight
the
so loud, so loud that I walked out of the house to get away, and like the neighbors were staring at me. Like, neighbors across the street could hear the screaming coming from my house, and they were just staring at me. And I was just like, this is humiliating. Like,
But they
I
were
was just so embarrassed.
just having a conversation.
No, they were fighting about something.
Was
I
it
don't
an
really want to get
English
into it.
or Urdu?
A combination.
A combination. And I love it when they start yelling and speaking in Urdu because I'm just like, oh, they're just telling a story. They're just very passionate. They're not angry at all. They're just very passionate about the story right now. Just like
Yeah.
that's crazy. I think just not having I think not having my family around is actually a bit of a godsend. Considering I have a bit of an insane family that I come from, so it's kind of good to kind of have my distance. But yeah, this is it's just not a it's not a fun time to, you know, it's just not a fun time for anyone, quite frankly.
Yeah.
We got
But
some
yeah.
comments here. What do we have? Mark said we have mandatory mask law here, and Mark is in North Carolina, I believe. And 3 weeks extension of phase two. We have a progressive governor too. Well, that's amazing. You guys are doing way better than California. And California is supposed to be, we're a blue state.
Yeah.
We're
Yeah.
supposed to be like, you know, ahead
We
of our
are the blue state right now.
the blue,
It's
very
not good.
blue. We're the blue state. Boo. Dude, this has been such a great conversation, Zara. This is like super helpful. Thank you. Thank you for coming and sharing your story. Where can people find you? And where can you talk tell us about your TED Talk, where we can find it?
My Instagram, my Facebook, my Twitter is at Mentally Muslim. I typed it in my name, Mentally Muslim. So go ahead and message me if you want to watch my TED Talk, and I'll send it to you. And yeah, please follow me and keep in touch. I'm doing this thing on Instagram where I'm working on my Photoshop skills. So every day I post me with like a different background, and so
I noticed though, I like those pictures. I noticed that.
So I'm bored. Okay, so give me ideas for other things to do because I'm just gonna post pictures like
Not?
whatever.
Why not? No, but this was a really great conversation. Hopefully, I'm gonna see you soon. Hopefully, the COVID cases would go down. But this is a really great conversation about South Asian and mental stigma. So, thank you very much.
And my website is mentallymuslim.com.
Got it. Got it. Got it.
Very across the board.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you very much, Zara. I will speak to you soon, my friend.
Okay, thanks.
Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Okay. All right, guys. That was Zara Khan. She's awesome. She's wonderful. I think this is my conversation for today. What are some of these comments here? Thank you, Zara. When will you be performing? You can go on Zara's social media at Mentally Muslim, and you can check her out. You can also follow me on Facebook at Mona Sheikh Comedian, IG and Twitter at Mona's Comedy. And I have a new YouTube channel, so please don't forget to subscribe. I am doing this Monday through Friday. I pick the hottest topic every single day, 6:15 p.m. Pacific. Thank you very much, Vinod, for tuning in. Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you very much, Tim and James. I appreciate you guys so very much. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate this. I hope this conversation benefits people. I hope it helps you. I hope it helps break more stigmas. And I hope people come forward with their stories and come forward with their pain and their suffering, because nobody should suffer alone. Nobody. We have more than enough people in the world to help you and to lend you, you know, an ear to listen to your pain. So have a great weekend. Please, again, don't forget to subscribe to the channel. I love you guys. I will see you on Monday, 6:15 Pacific time. See you then. Stay safe out there.